Welcome, friends, to Inks and Issues, a podcast where we discuss comics in a book club style format. I sold my life story for the price of a kangaroo man, and I'm Jonah Gregory.
And my name's Karen Bennett, and my farts imbue you with the power to know everything about comics.
And today we are talking about Tank Girl, The Odyssey. Karen, did you know anything about Tank Girl going into this?
The only exposure that I ever had to Tank Girl was my grandpa had a copy of Tank Girl, the movie that they made, on VHS.
Nice.
And it was on the shelf at the beach house that they owned. And I just remember when I was a kid looking at the cover of the VHS being like, wow, that movie looks real fucking weird. And like, obviously, I didn't watch it because, you know, not really the sort of movie that you would let a young child watch.
Yeah, I was going to say that based on what I've read of this comic, seems like a good thing you avoided it.
Uh-huh. Yes, very good. I didn't know anything about Tank Girl. I didn't know anything about Tank Girl, The Odyssey or any of that before I read this. Did you?
No, I knew it by reputation. In a good way. Like, I never saw the movie. It was always on my, like, I should probably get around to seeing this just because it looks so flippin' bizarre, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But I just never quite got around to it. I do know my friends that are in Kirby Crackle, the band, their cover art on all their albums is one of the guys who I know has done cover work for Tank Girl before. Pretty much all I know. Cool. That's like the one connection I have to anything Tank Girl related is when he was at the con and I walked by his booth, he had prints of that as well as, you know, some like cool art books and whatnot. And I was like, oh yeah, it's the same guy. That's awesome.
Oh, damn. So,
yeah. So that's about my extensive knowledge of Tank Girl. This one was voted on by our lovely patrons. So it's not one we probably would have thought of. So
no.
I was happy that this one kind of came out of left field because we were like, you know, between episodes, we're like, man, we did a lot of Marvel and DC stuff. So like we're trying to think outside the box a little bit or think outside the bun, depending on if you're Taco Bell or not. Karen, you might not get that reference because you guys are just now getting Taco Bells, I hear.
Yeah, it's going to open in like 2 months.
Nice.
And it's going to open up in 2 months, and it's going to be like maybe 15 minutes down the road from me.
Ooh.
I'm going to get real fat.
Yeah, I mean, if you're gonna bother going to Taco Bell, you might as well go all out, right?
Yeah.
Get something that's technically three different meals all shoved into one.
Yes.
That's my suggestion.
Yes. Yeah, something that's carbohydrates wrapped in other carbohydrates.
Yeah, full of nacho cheese.
Yeah.
that's where it's at right there. But yeah, so this was I was really excited that this one got not only nominated, but then the votes, you know, kind of dominated for this one.
It did,
coming
yeah.
in. So I was excited to cover this just because I'm like, I've always heard good things and never got around to reading any of it. So
no, neither had I. Neither had I. So thank you to our patrons.
Yeah. So let's jump right in, I think. So do you have any fun facts for Tank Girl, The Odyssey?
I do, and I'll just give you a quick synopsis as well. Tank Girl's first ever full-color book-long adventure, featuring brand new introduction from writer Peter Milligan and rarely seen Tank Girl comic strips by Milligan, Hewlett, and Philip Bond. The epic saga is viewed through the deeply warped Tank Girl lens and a labyrinthine tale involving demented Hollywood agents, zombies, James Joyce, the Prince of Farts, the ancient Greek poet Homer, and shedloads of nudity and violence. It doesn't actually really tell you anything about what it's about, but that's what they put on the back of the book. So, you know.
Yeah.
fun fact before I actually get to the actual fun facts. We both had to buy physical copies of this book because you can't buy it on Comixology in English. You can buy it in French, but you can't buy it in English.
Mm-hmm.
Which I thought was really weird.
Not sure why. I'm wondering if it's like there's strange licensing stuff with these books, possibly.
Beats the hell out of me.
Yeah, but I don't know.
Anyway.
Someone knows, write in.
Yeah, if someone does know, let me know. That would be kind of interesting to find out. So Tank Girl is a British comic book created by Jamie Hewlett and Alan Martin. And it was originally drawn by Jamie Hewlett and has also been drawn by a crap ton of other people. So according to Alan Martin, Jamie drew, and I quote, "a grotty looking beaver of a girl brandishing an unfeasible firearm. One of our friends was working on a project to design a pair of headphones and was basing his design on the type used by World War II tank drivers. His studio in Worthing was littered with loads of photocopies of combat vehicles. I pinched one of the images and gave it to Jamie, who then stuck it behind his grotty girl illustration and then added a logo which read Tank Girl." So that's where Tank Girl originally came from. And they were originally published in the debut issue of a UK magazine called Deadline in 1988 and quickly became way more popular than anything else in the magazine and appeared in the magazine until the magazine finally shuttered in 1995. So Tank Girl, The Odyssey, was originally published in 1995, written by Peter Milligan with art by Jamie Hewlett. So Peter Milligan started his writing career for Sounds Music Papers comic strip, The Electric Hoax, and then eventually moved on to 2000 AD and stuck around there for a while and has since done like a bunch of other, you know, bits and pieces here and there. He's written for Animal, Shade the Changing Man, Batman. He apparently pitched the character of Azrael at a meeting at DC Comics, which was, I thought was kind of cool. He's done X-Force, X-Static, X-Men, Hellblazer, Justice League Dark, Red Lanterns, and he's also done Stormwatch, as well as, you know, a bunch of other like one-shots and special issues and sort of various pieces here and there.
Mm-hmm.
Jamie Hewlett, however, invented Tank Girl, and he also designed Gorillaz, the band.
Oh, yeah. That's kind of a thing.
Yeah. People have heard of, right? Yeah. I was like, who's this Jamie Hewlett guy? And like looked him up and was like, oh, it's the Gorillaz guy. And he's like a world famous artist.
Yep. No, when I was a few pages in, I'm like, wait a second. And then I had to like immediately Google it. I'm like, okay, I'm not crazy. This does look like the Gorillaz.
Yeah. Because it is.
Because it's the same artist. And I mean that in all the best possible ways. Because the Gorillaz are fantastic.
They are very good. So those are your fun facts. That's all I have. I'm sorry.
Okay, that's okay. Let's get into the first part then. This is broken up into four parts. So this opens, these names I'm guessing are going to have like weird British pronunciations that I don't know.
Well, they're supposed to be Australian. I apologize.
Oh, that's true. They are supposed to be Australian. So maybe you can help me out because, like, you know, you guys are next door neighbors, right? That's how that works.
That is true. I was afraid you were about to say you're the same place, at which point I would
have. Oh, God, no.
I would have stopped my record. Who would even make that joke? Got it off the call. Deleted my Twitter account.
I mean, it's how I always say is, you know, it's from Flight of the Conchords where they say that the Australian accent sounds kind of like theirs, but more evil.
This is so true. This is very true.
All right. So Booga, the kangaroo lover of the titular Tank Girl, is in peril, constantly under threat from the sleazy movie producer Tony the Blazer, their television headed son, in quotes, because not
he's,
sure.
He's but, a TV man. Like he literally is yeah, a TV man.
Uh huh. He is a TV with a human body somehow.
Yes.
Uses his TV waves to contact Tank Girl and ask her to come home. Tank Girl herself is bloated by fame, physically and metaphorically, and is currently in Dublin eating and drinking with the Calypso Irish Army. However, when she receives Telly's message, she quickly departs. After slimming down in one panel with the Andrea Dworkin pretty and petite diet, she sets off in her tank. I'm guessing that's some sort of reference to a thing that I don't get.
Yeah, I assume so as well. Because I was like, that's such a specific joke.
Right. And I feel like this has a lot of that going on.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my goodness. Yes. I think like the... I was reading the first sort of bit, and the kangaroo, since he is Australian, his name would actually be Booga.
Booga?
Booga, yeah. As in, like, booger, but with an A on the end.
Right.
So when I was like...
That tracks with this book?
Yeah. And when I was like, oh, yeah, it's a kangaroo that's, like, going to be seduced by a movie producer, but this TV is going to get Tank Girl to come and save him. I was like, sorry, what? Hang on. And I had to read the start of it like a couple times to really kind of absorb like the tone of the book.
Right. Figure out if you were actually having some sort of waking nightmare or if this is just how weird the comic is.
Exactly.
All right. So she sets off in the tank and then encounters and destroys CIA headquarters. shoots a bunch of them, and her and a fan head to a bar to pick up her crew, which is Jet Girl, Sub Girl, and Varney, plus some locals, O'Hell, O'Madigan, and O.Y., because, you know, Irish names, I guess, is what they're making fun of there. But alas, they don't want to come, so she waits for them to pass out drunk and steals them and makes them join her party. Barney's less than pleased by this and uses the tank to blow up the balloon they're all flying underneath and kills them all instantly.
It was a very powerful moment. I was like, oh, they're gonna crash and like they'll have to kind of like, you know, walk back to Australia. And I was like, no, they're dead.
Mm-hmm.
They're dead. They're just straight up, they're just dead.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's it gets weird pretty fast here, because they awake in the land of the Stiffs and are thoroughly dead. O.Y. speculates that this is the suicide plot because it smells so bad, and in his own words, mm-hmm. only idiots commit suicide. And to which Tank Girl strangles him and punches a tooth out.
Which I was like, yeah, good.
Yeah, exactly. That's her response to his comment there. O'Madigan explains that Tank Girl's mother poisoned herself and had her grave desecrated by koalas, because Australia.
Yeah.
Speaking of which, Tank Girl has stormed off and her dead mother appears. She calls her an unwanted pregnancy and explains that she can arrange for Tank Girl to return to life for 24 hours. What she needs to do then is find Albert Einstein Olis, the professor of farts, and secure a batch of dead reviving farts. Yes, this is really in the comic.
Yes.
Then farts on herself and her friends. And in exchange, her mother wants her to resurrect her corpse so that she can dance on her dead husband's grave.
So there's
the reason she brought Tank Girl back to life.
This is the entire... Like, it's a whole thing. There's a panel in this, which I think I took a photo of and I sent it to you, where her mother, where she says, and then what do I do next? And then it's just her mother, like, sort of turning around her shoulder. And her mother's all, like, haggard and, like, you know, very, like, bog witch looking with, like, long black hair. And she just turns and she just has, like, this one, like, massive eye. And she's like, and then you fart on yourself. And I was like, what is happening?
Yeah.
It's very funny, though.
Yeah, it's definitely got doing its own thing. So Tank Girl agrees and is brought back to life. She kicks the mortician in the head and sells his organs to Americans because he's being a creeper, because they're all like nude in a morgue when they wake up.
Yes.
She hops in the tank and begins her search and comes up totally empty. And for a bit of respite, she takes in a movie, only to discover that it's 16 hours long. Distraught that she can't leave a film early, Tank Girl is stuck between a rock and a hard place. And that is the end of part one.
The very end of that part is so funny, because she's just sitting in this movie being like, oh, this is really good. Like, I'm feeling a bit more relaxed now, but I should probably go. Hey, how long is this movie? And someone's like, oh, it's an art house film. It's 16 hours. And she says, oh, I can't be a cultural Philistine and walk out early. What am I going to do? It just ends.
Yep. It's all right. So let's get into part one here. So what did you think of this?
It was, man, this is weird. This is a weird intro. I mean, same as you, I had no exposure to Tank Girl whatsoever. So I didn't know what to expect from this. And just like even the start, where it's like there's a kangaroo being seduced by a movie producer. And so a guy who literally has a television for a head contacts Tank Girl, who is like massively fat in Dublin, sitting with the CIA, which is the Calypso Irish Army, who are guys in Hawaiian shirts playing on little ukuleles in Ireland. And I was like, is this all like a reference? Is this canon? Is this that well-established, well-referenced Tank Girl lore that I'm missing out on?
Totally.
As it went on, I was like, oh no, it's ridiculous from top to bottom. And I think kind of by the end of the first part, I was warming to it a little more.
Yeah. I had no, like I said, no idea really what to expect. I just knew it was really, really out there. And
yeah,
this very much lived up to that in a way that makes me go, and they tried to make this into a movie. Why?
Yeah. Because, yeah. That's the thing. It's, I don't know why.
Because this appears to take place after the movie came out, right? Because they keep referencing like that they had a movie made about her.
Yes, yes, yes. Everyone keeps telling her that she sucks because she like let the fame go to her head from her movie.
Right. So, and as far as I remember, that movie was a massive flop. So maybe that's flop. Maybe that's part of the gag, is that it was terrible, and yet she gets so full of herself that she, you know, moves to Ireland and almost drinks herself to death. I don't know. Yeah, it's strange.
It's weird. Yeah.
But I didn't hate it, so.
No. Should we just go straight into part two?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. So part two, Tank Girl solves her dilemma by setting the underpants of the man sitting next to her on fire. This leads to the entire theater burning down. She speaks to her mum via psychic, who tells her to look under wind instruments in the Yellow Pages, which is a very stupid but very funny joke. Unfortunately, the professor has only learned English by reading headlines and a thesaurus, so finding the correct farts is a little difficult. But eventually, Tank Girl seduces the professor and walks away with a capsule of farts that will poison you, a fart to make you impotent, and the dead raising farts. The professor speaking in headlines was really funny. I thought it was very clever. Let's see if I can. She's like beating him up, and he's like, and all he says is, "Enigmatic professor, unlikely to accede to Antipodean she-devil's cruel demands." And like, that's just the way he talks the entire way. And I'm just right. I found it very, very funny. So Tank Girl takes the farts and revives her friends and holds fast that the last capsule of farts is to be reserved for her dead mother. Her will strong, they set off for Australia. Hard cut, 6 months later, they're lost and drift on the ocean with Jet Girl dead.
Yep.
Tank Girl uses the last of the farts to revive her. Her mother immediately notices and sucks them into a vortex. Meanwhile, Telly continues to rebuff Tony the Blazer, protecting Booger from being sucked into a shitty movie deal. The gang are blasted out of the pool of the movie producer, Mr. Gondanian. His pool boy, the gazelle-like creature known to men as Young Jose, is also there. After offering Tank Girl a bowl to throw up in, which she does, and a large pile of greasy food, the gang passes out. The gang wakes up to find that Mr. Gondanian and his producer buddies are actually cannibals, and they've eaten OY's legs. It all seems lost when Tank Girl remembers she has lethal poison. Just kidding, she remembers she has an impotency fart and feeds it to OY and tells him to get his arms eaten. So he does. The producers then plan to do deviant things with Tank Girl and company, but alas, the arms they've eaten just start to take effect. Frustrated with their own impotency, they turn on each other. Violently. The strange gazelle-like creature known to man as Young Jose then frees them from the cage and they make their escape. Unfortunately, the dying Mr. Gondanian emits a high-pitched shriek that attracts hordes of suffering movie producers. OY, without his arms or legs, stays behind to pitch a new movie to them and buy the gang time. He is eaten, but they escape safely. Tank Girl threatens an airport employee with her tank and they end up on a flight to Australia. While on the flight, Tank Girl eats a bunch of rock candy and breaks a tooth, figuring that this means something epic is about to happen. What'd you think of part two, Jenna?
This is where you learn, the audience, not you specifically, necessarily, that the people that worked on Tank Girl were just slightly unhappy with how things went down with the movie, considering they made movie producers into cannibals that are impotent and turn on each other at the drop of a hat.
Yeah, and they're all really sweaty and they drool all the time.
And they're also like, you know how like Ren and Stimpy does those close-ups that are just disgusting?
Oh, yeah, 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 yeah.
They
yeah.
look like that all the time. All the time, well.
Yeah.
But I think by part two, you're kind of in the groove of this, how weird this book is and is going to be. And like, by this point, I was just completely rolling with it. Like, I'm like, okay, there's no way I'm going to predict what weird ass thing they're going to do next. So, like, just sit back and enjoy the ride.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
What did you think?
I really enjoyed the second part. I have to be honest. Like I enjoyed the first part. I enjoyed the first part as well. But I think the second part, same as you, like it's kind of where I found the groove of it a little bit more. But the thing with the farts is really funny. Even though it is just about farts. And then I think like the thing where they're like, yeah, we're gonna go to Australia and we're gonna make it and it's gonna be fine. And then just like they're just hard cut. Between like one panel and the next, it's just like 6 months later, they're still at sea and one of them's dead. And I have to say
that that style of gag is one of my absolute favorites.
It was very funny.
Like anytime on The Simpsons, something happens and then it immediately cuts to like the ambulance driving them to the hospital. Like it just does a hard cut to like sirens and an ambulance driving. That gets me every time they do that. I definitely appreciate those jokes in here. I also kind of forgot, I don't know if we mentioned this at the top, this was actually based on the Odyssey and the Iliad. Heavily inspired by, to the point where like they had to tone it down because the original script was like had too many references that you'd basically have to be like a classic lit major or whatever to understand. So I mean, I'm like, okay, I read whatever condensed version of the Odyssey that you had to read in junior high, so let's see if I remember any of it.
It was all well over my head.
I mean, I was just waiting for the Cyclops to show up, which does eventually
happen. Yes.
Yeah.
I also there's a bit where I think it's when Mr. Gondanian dies and he's just like shrieking, and then it does like all these like different cuts to all these different movie producers, and they're all just kind of like sort of rearing up like meerkats to suddenly descend on this place, and there's hundreds of movie producers like crawling up the hill to come and kill them, and it's like they're all just talking about movies that they're going to produce and being like, I think we can get Tom Cruise interested in this one. Or if not Tom, how about Brad? Is he too short? How about a cameo from Anthony Hopkins? And it's just like, that's their kind of like zombie chatter as they're crawling along to come kill them. It's very funny.
Yeah. I liked it.
Speaking of disgusting producers and the Ren and Stimpy close-ups, what do you think of the art?
Oh, just overall? It's perfect for this style of writing and humor. Like it's a bit off-putting at first, but like if it had a more serious story it was trying to tell, it might not work for me. But because it is so over the top, like the storytelling, it fits incredibly well. It kind of is like it reminds me of like maybe like a Mad Magazine type of, you know, the weird art they would do sometimes in those kind of books, except cranked way, way up, like even way beyond that. I mean, like,
I don't have
a lot of point of reference for, you know, this particular comic, that's kind of where my brain went.
100%. And it does. Like once you know that it's from the guy who designed the gorillas, or just gorillas, I suppose, since they're not the gorillas. A lot of the characters do look like, members of gorillas, if gorillas were real gross as well.
Yes. Yeah. Like there's a lot of cuts when they're surprised where they have the eyes with no pupils and just different weird stuff like that.
Yeah. And things like coming off them, like the whole thing where it's like someone's smoking a cigarette, but then they're surprised. And so like their mouth opens, but the cigarette's like hanging in the air. And
Nice, and Looney Tunes-esque touches there.
Yeah.
All right. Jump into part three. I'll take that one.
Yeah.
All right. So Tank Girl fishes out that broken tooth that she broke on the rock candy and flicks it away. And it flies through a wall in the airplane and it hits the back of the head of the pilot. And it actually shows a cutaway of it like driving into his brain and killing him. It's just so ridiculously over the top that it's like so you can't help but laugh.
That's so dumb.
So, of course, he's instantly killed and crashes the plane, even though there's a co-pilot like, hey, are you OK? But the plane is like immediately a fireball flying out of the sky.
Yeah. Like the co-pilot's just screaming the whole time.
Right. It's just so over the top. I love it. And then we see Tank Girl. We get like a flashback of her when she and Booga made Telly, and she's reminded that Tony the Blazer is still threatening Booga. So it's like, oh yeah, there was a plot we were supposed to be doing. So once again, they survive some crazy, you know, fiery wreckage and wake up from the plane crash. Two guys that are the Wandering Ricks tell her that the rest of the gang has been entranced by a goth rock and roll band with a bad dress sense called the Sirens. So that was one of the big, you know, things that you would actually know the reference, or
that's a reference that even I get.
Yeah, I was gonna say that's one I got. So Tank Girl, of course, heads off to the concert where the Sirens are surrounded by their decaying groupies. So more zombie imagery here.
Oh, yes, yes.
The gang is trying to resist the allure of the music, but are slowly slipping. Tank Girl arrives, crushing groupies beneath her spiked boots. The Sirens can't wait to entrance her and deflower her, is what they say. Not my words again. But Tank Girl's only pretending to be entranced by the music, and then just beats the crap out of all of them. She kicks the guitarist's head off, kills the drummer with a shark, and just kind of slaughters the entire band. And then turns them over to the now not entranced groupies. And explain that she wasn't entranced because her ears are so full of wax. So
kids, it was super gross.
Cleaning your ears is going to get you killed. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Cleaning your ears, you will turn into a mindless zombie in service to a goth rock and roll band. So never clean your ears.
Exactly.
You heard it here first.
So they regroup and depart, leaving the strange gazelle-like creature known to men as Young Jose to die of a flesh-eating virus.
It's so random. It's just a complete like throwaway line where he's like, I'm fine, I only have a flesh eating and then just dies.
Yeah. It's like, well, we don't need this character anymore, so goodbye.
Just kill him, I guess.
Yep. It's what they do. All right, so then back at sea, Tank Girl's mother strikes again. So she turns into a giant face that comes out of the water and, you know, is going to eat their boat. And the boiler man suddenly becomes overcome by envy and ends up blowing up the boat they're on.
It's such a funny scene. The boiler man just standing under the boat being like, I'm so happy as a boiler man.
Right.
Wait a second. This sucks ass.
Yes. It was that scene was very good. I was laughing.
And there's the lever says something on it.
Danger only used when gripped by the politics of envy.
That's right.
It's such a good gag too, because it's like, why is the guy who is just running the boiler like gonna sacrifice himself to save all these random people that are basically holding him hostage?
It turns out
he isn't going to.
He's not going to do that.
So he blows up the boat by flipping that switch that is there because of reasons. And this forces the group to land on an island, and they check into the Cyclops Hotel. So another time where I got the reference. But it turns out that it's no ordinary hotel. It's actually a bit of a crazy cult that likes to remove one eye from people's heads. They use the eyes of St. Paul to immolate some rando who doesn't agree with their philosophy on being Cyclopses. But luckily, O'Madigan shoots lasers from his eyes, and which is a thing he can do.
Yes, he can. Canonically. Uh-huh. That deep Tank Girl lore.
Mm-hmm. And then he's able to combat the eye of St. Paul so that the gang can escape before their eyes are plucked out. But sadly, O'Madigan is, you know... He doesn't make it. Yeah. So as they're mourning O'Madigan, the man himself shows up, swimming away from the island, and explains that in the past, he masturbated so much that he went blind, and God restored his sight, making his eyes supremely powerful. They decide to replenish their provisions by slaughtering some nearby oxen. And that's the end of part three.
It's so stupid.
Yeah.
The fact that he just like explains it. He's just like, yeah, I masturbated so much that I went blind and then God restored my sight. So obviously my eyes can combat the eye of St. Paul. And it's like, oh, right. Yeah, of course.
Yeah, I mean, come on.
It does a very good job of just presenting absolute absurdity. Yeah. But you're so in the group at this point that you're just like, okay, yeah, cool.
Yeah, all right. It's fine. What else you got?
So yeah, pretty much.
So that was the end of part three. Things are heating up. So what did you think of part three?
I thought the whole bit with the sirens was really good. Just having Tank Girl absolutely wreck shop and some guys and kick the shit out of them was really fun.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree.
And I do enjoy the Boilerman scene a lot. It's very funny.
Yeah, there was some really good gags in this one. Just the complete ridiculousness of how random it is from panel to panel, like where she's fighting and then she suddenly has a shark for no reason that she's like biting someone's head off with, and like when she needs to be strong enough to literally kick someone's head off, then why not? She just can.
Yeah, exactly.
There's a scene, I can't remember where it fell into this, but in one of the fight scenes, she's just like not even looking and doing the thing where they do, you know, punch a guy that they're not looking at from behind, and his head is also just flying off of his head.
Oh, yeah. It's a supremely violent comic, by the way.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, for sure.
Really violent, really gross.
Yep. All right. So I know we're moving quick, but do you want to just jump into part four and then we can discuss as a whole?
Why not? So Tank Girl warns the crew not to kill the oxen, but they do it anyway. Turns out they're actually all disguised mobsters posing for an animal-free circus after their boss cried at the treatment of circus animals. They fire a hail of bullets at the gang, and O'Madigan deflects the bullets with his arms. Alas, he can't do it forever, so they wave a used sanitary pad in surrender. The mobsters are disgusted and leave. And there's not even like any kind of question about it either. They just wave this used tampon,
yep,
and they're like, oh, that's disgusting. Let's leave.
He says, come on, boys. I don't want nothing to do with these perverts. Tell you the truth, I feel just a little dirty. And he's like crying as he says it.
They depart once more, and Tank Girl's mother appears in the ocean demanding her revenge. Tank Girl asks why she doesn't just torment her husband in the land of the dead, but her mother can't find him. It is at this point that the media mogul Sir Rupert Sir swoops in and offers them a life of luxury, and they accept. Some time passes and the hedonism has gone to their heads and they're all bastards now. As Sir Rupert Sir tells Tank Girl that she needs to dress up as a lovable bladder on TV, O'Madigan slips on a stake. This means his wig flies off, his teeth fall out, and his corset splits. He's secretly a fat old man. He then shits himself.
Oh, it's so dumb.
It's so stupid. Totally humbled by the experience, Tank Girl shoots Sir Rupert Sir's head off with her tank, and they leave.
I also like how the tank just magically appears when they need it to.
Yeah.
Like, sometimes it shows them actually, like, trying to transport it. And other times it's just there again, even though they haven't Yeah. And they haven't shown it for, like, 12 pages. And it's like, the tank's just slightly off panel every time.
Yeah, every single time. The tank is there, but you just can't see it.
Yep.
As they get closer to Australia, Tank Girl contacts Telly and arranges for them all to meet at a bar. There, in disguises that they shed in about 2 seconds, Tank Girl's mum shows up, demanding her revenge. It turns out, however, that O'Hell is in fact Tank Girl's father, who was only following her around because any good times or money would come from her. Tank Girl thinks for a moment and shoots him, condemning him to hell with his ex-wife. she only considers it for like 2 seconds, where he's like, I'm your father, surely you can forgive me, and she's like, no, and just shoots him.
Yeah, I also like how the mom is like this weird like hell beast creature, and he still just looks like a normal dude sitting next to her in the underworld.
Yeah, it's very funny, and they come up with all these elaborate disguises where they all have like suits and like mustaches and hats on, and then they arrive at the bar and Telly is just immediately like, "Why are you in disguises? What are you doing?" And they just take them off and they're just naked underneath, and they're just naked for the rest of the scene.
Sure, why not?
Yeah, why not? The gang then brutally murder all of the movie producers, with Tony the Blazer having his tongue ripped out his throat. Our story closes with Tank Girl and Booger once more in bed together.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the end.
That's it.
The end is them showing up at Tank Girl's house and they just murder a whole bunch of movie producers.
Yep. All right. Well,
that was a book.
That is a book. It's a very quick read.
It is pretty quick.
Do we want to get into some final thoughts so that we can just kind of full on discuss? Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, I think so. Jonah, what do you think? Would you recommend Tank Girl?
So the Odyssey? I would, actually, surprisingly. I mean, with lots of content warnings, of course, because
yes,
this is your dad's Tank Girl, which means it's incredibly violent.
Yes. Yeah. No, this is your dad's Tank Girl.
So a lot of the stuff that we've read that we end up not liking, I feel like tries really hard to pull off some of this stuff. The problem is humor is incredibly subjective and much more difficult than most people think. So
yes,
while say a book, randomly, I'll pick one, Agents of Hate. Just completely random off the top of my head. Tries to do some of that, like, kind of subversive humor. They're also trying to do it within being very hamstrung because they're working within, like, the Marvel universe. They can't even say a fuck. So, like, what can you do with that? When you're trying to be, like, dirty and subversive and stuff, right? So this being, like,
you can't even use a basic, like, curse word for anything.
They can't say a cuss at all. That actually kind of annoys me. Like, okay, not kind of. It really annoys me. Like, if you're going to put in swearing, but then you have to bleep it out, just use a different word.
Yeah. Just write something different. If you know you can't say it, just write something different.
Yeah, exactly. It's really annoying. It was really annoying in that one, in the Batman year one or whatever.
Zero year.
It was really annoying in that too. This, however, is, I think, the thing, like, just Tank Girl in general, the thing that a lot of those books were inspired by as far as ones that are trying to be, like, this weird subversive type of humor because they're from, like, you know, it's a UK thing and it's that, like, kind of punk rock, like, you know, you can't publish this at Marvel, you know, you have to publish weird indie magazine
I feel like the British also just do, like, that weird surreal stuff just way better than Americans as well. So I think like Agents of Hate, even if they were allowed to say a fuck, like, it would have never really reached that same kind of weirdness as something like Tank Girl.
Yeah. And I don't know what it is about the culture that makes it so different, but it's like when you watch British comedies and there's just, like, something weirdly different about everything about them.
I don't know enough about comedy or culture to possibly theorize what it would be.
Right. But I did not actually expect to like this as much as I did. Like, I thought, oh, yeah, maybe I'll get a couple laughs out of this. But I was kind of expecting that level of crassness to just grate on me. And this just proved to me, like, okay, it's not that those types of things bother me. It's that those other people aren't funny. They just think they're funny.
Yeah.
Like, these jokes can be funny, even to someone like me, who generally would be like, oh, yeah, that's not my style of humor. But this book is like, oh, this stuff can be hilarious if it's done right.
Yeah, 100%.
And it takes the team. Like, it's a combination of the way the story is written and also how weird the art is and how unique it is. There's definitely nothing I've read like this. Or at least if it was trying to be like this, it failed, because this stands out as, like, if I know someone who has that style of humor, I'd be like, okay, you have to read this because this is better than the stuff you like.
What did you think? Yeah. I was kind of the same. Like, I think when I sort of read the start of it, I was like, okay, like, here we go. Like, I was kind of imagining, like, this is your dad's Tank Girl, in, like, a very sort of derogatory kind of way, in that, like, it was going to be, like, crass and gross and really rude, and like it is, mm-hmm. but I imagine it was going to be those things in a very dated way.
Right.
In that, like, you know, it was just going to be kind of a bit uncomfortable to read, and, you know, it was going to be kind of boring as well, mm-hmm. As it just slowly tried to top itself over and over and over again. But it doesn't. It reaches a height of absurdity and just kind of coasts that wave. And that wave that it manages to reach is really well written and really funny.
Yeah.
Which I think is the thing. Like you were saying, this kind of absurd, like, you know, super wacky, like anything goes, like who knows what's going to happen next, and like it's all non sequiturs and yada yada yada. Like that can totally work. It can actually work really well, but you have to actually be a funny person for it to work out.
Yeah.
Again, just to pick a random comic, mm-hmm. completely out of nowhere, Agents of Hate. Just, okay. You know.
Yeah, I've heard of it.
That was the same one you picked. Weird. You can definitely see the parallels. You can definitely see the influence from this sort of thing, like Tank Girl, going into stuff like Agents of Hate.
Yeah.
Agents of Hate, just, as we've said before, it just isn't funny.
Right.
And I think part of the reason is that Tank Girl Odyssey makes a lot of really gross jokes. It makes a lot of really crass jokes, and you know, it has like its main character vomit into a bowl and then then eat a bunch of fried food and fall asleep and fart a lot, and like that's gross. And it makes like gross jokes about like kicking people's heads off and, you know, like all this kind of stuff. But it doesn't punch down at any point. It's not mean about any of its jokes. Whereas something like Agents of Hate, it's trying to be weird and wacky and stuff, and also it's kind of mean as well, mm-hmm. which I think is kind of one of the big problems with it.
I would agree. I think this gets like, it walks up to that line, and you're about to be like, oh no, where are they going with this? And then they kind of flip it around on you, and then the guy that was being shitty gets his head punched off or whatever.
exactly. Like when they woke up in the land of the Stiffs and Omadigan or whatever it is, it's like, oh, it smells really bad here. This must be where all the people who kill themselves go. And you're like, oh, that's a bit mean. And then Tanker just beats the shit out of him, and you're like, okay, cool.
Like, hey, that's not okay, dude.
Yeah, so I think that's kind of part of why it works is it is gross and crude and you know, quote unquote random, right. But it isn't very mean about it.
I think it's like the difference between this is actually subversive and,
yeah,
let's 100%. Take another random example. Say wacky, yeah, sure. Let's say Wacky Raceland, a book that we covered about a month ago. It thought it was being subversive. It wasn't. It was just a bad story.
Yeah, yeah.
And we get into all the problems with that book on that episode. So I don't really want to dredge those up. But there was some real bad problems with that book.
Yeah, 100%. It thought it was being subversive, but it was actually just repeating tropes. Whereas this was being subversive by not really following any particular tropes at all.
Right.
I mean, it was following the sort of overall structure of like a very well-known story, but it was certainly not predictable in any sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. I would definitely recommend this, as long as people know going in there's lots of content warnings as far as nudity, violence, you know, there's some gross parts, there's barfing, there's some things in there for sure.
Yeah, 100%.
Well, I think that's going to bring us to an end. So,
it will.
Kieran, where can people find you?
You can find me on Twitter. I'm at MrK_Bennett. You can also find my D&D podcast. That is for Crits and Giggles, which is at for CNG Podcast on Twitter. Jonah, where can people find you on the net?
You can find me at A Real Jonah on Twitter. And also the Inks and Issues main account is at Inks and Issues. I don't know if we've mentioned that in like forever, so I figured I'd throw that out there.
Yeah, that's fair.
And I have been trying to stream on our twitch.tv/Inks and Issues account. I've just been running into some annoying technical difficulties because it turns out streaming is kind of a pain in the ass sometimes. When things decide not to work, It is awful. When they work, it's great. But I started the Amazing Spider-Man 2, the movie-based game, and it's weird because it's like, it looks pretty good. You know, it's an early PS4 game. It plays okay. It's just, man, the newer Spider-Man game just blows it out of the water in every way. So it's really weird. It almost feels like you're playing an alpha version of that game, which is really strange. But it's been enjoyable just to see something weird and different with that franchise that I totally missed and didn't know existed. So yeah, that's what I've been up to. But I guess with that, we will see you all next time. Do we know what we're doing next time? I guess we don't, because the schedule, we're working on scheduling a bunch of guest hosts, because we wanted to like start letting people know what's coming out so that you can read with us, because some people had shown an interest in that. The problem is scheduling is not the easiest thing in the world.
No, it's really not. And it's especially not easy when you have like guests on the show as well. And so, you know, I think the current block of stuff that we have at the moment, which is including Tank Girl, that block has shuffled around, I think, maybe 8 or 9 times.
Right. So we will go follow the Twitter feed. We'll start posting on there like, hey,
yeah,
we're recording this one. So if you want to leave us feedback or whatever, just add us on Twitter and we can read those on the show if people are interested in that. So. All right. Well, I think that's going to wrap it up. So we will see you next time. Goodbye.
Bye. She's just a girl. She's just a girl. The girl you want.